All right, seeing none, we'll move on. I have no reports. Do any committee members have any reports? The next item is approval of the minutes of September 15th.
Move to approve.
And there is a second from Ron, I believe. Jeff made the motion. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The next item is number six, a resolution to appoint Tom Santarelli, who is with us. Tom, if you'd like to join us.
Thank you.
At the table. And I'll leave it up to Bob to introduce you to serve on the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As you know, the Civil Service Commission of Kenosha County has as its primary responsibility hiring deputy sheriffs for the sheriff's department and manages the promotion activities when people move from deputies to sergeants, sergeants to lieutenants, etc. And so it is a very important job that our volunteers undertake, and Mr. Santarelli, we're pleased to report, has accepted our invitation. He's very active in the community. He is a local attorney, of course. He has been active in the Boys and Girls Club, board member of St. Joseph's Catholic Academy. He has volunteered through South Fork Bank and a current board member of the Kenosha County Bar Association and a member of the Little Leaguers of Kenosha. And so, again, we are pleased that he has accepted our invitation, and we would request your support from Mr. Santarelli. He's here to answer any questions you may have.
I'll make good.
Approve.
Second.
Discussion. Tom, did you want to say anything before we vote?
No. He's an attorney. When he gets the motion, he's not going to talk.
This could be easier.
I just briefly asked him, and he answered properly if I thought there's any possibility of a conflict of interest with the county with his positions he had, and he said no. So I was absolutely satisfied with that.
Ed.
I'd just like to thank him for his service.
Anything further? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, thank you. And the resolution will come before the board on Tuesday.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good
evening.
All right, the next item on the agenda is a Kemper Center update. And Gary, you recall Gary Valancourt is the president.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Last time I was before you was at your meeting August 11th. At that meeting, there were a number of different items that you brought forward, and I took those and sent all the committee members a letter on August 13th detailing those items and how we would pursue in trying to resolve those issues and bring them back to you. I have a quick summary of those, and we'll take, of course, any questions. One of the items you wanted to know about was caterers paying a $500 service fee. Well, since that last meeting, the Kemper Center Incorporated Board of Directors has approved a proposal for a new security deposit concept amount, which will be $250, a service fee to begin November 1st of this year and continue for 1 year. After 1 year, it will be analyzed to determine its effectiveness. This is a refundable service fee. It will be charged to all caterers, with the amount refunded dependent on items such as the condition of the Kemper kitchen after the event, including equipment, breakage, theft, and overall cleanliness. The amount refunded will be at the discretion, as it always is, of Kemper's Director of Hospitality and Sales. The next item was the difference in the per plate fee paid by caterers. The Kemper Center Incorporated Board of Directors has approved a proposal that, beginning once again November 1st of this year and continuing for 1 year, the per plate fee charged to all caterers must include a $2.50 fee. There is no different fee for different caterers. Every caterer will have the $2.50. Contracts, you had a very good suggestion. There will be a contract established for use between the caterer of an event and Kemper Center that will detail the aforementioned items I've reviewed and any other appropriate particulars. So there will be a separate contract besides a contract between Kemper and the individuals renting the facility. There'll be one between Kemper and the caterers. Classification of caterers, a very hot subject over the past few months. All caterers will be recommended. There will be no special classification, no preferred caterer, no recommended caterer. They will all be the same. It should be noted the first question clients ask deals with our facilities, our their options, our logistics that we offer them. Our number one priority, and you understand why, is for us to sell Kemper Center. We have to sell the facility to bring in the money to support the facility. But again, there will be no classifications at all of caterers. Now, as far as marketing, we do have some promotional material that we use when a client comes in. All of that material will continue to be made available to clients with the clarification, because we can't just throw all that away. When it is all used, we will have new material designed and printed. And we're fortunate enough, as many of you know, to have the owner of a design firm on our board of directors who will do all of that pro bono. And that probably in a year saves Kemper Center, I would say, about $15,000 to $25,000. But we're going to go through what we have right now. You wanted to know about caterers used. And we went back, I asked our director of sales, events, hospitality, and she said from December 1st of 2015, when she started, and as of last week, there have been 11 different caterers that have worked out of the kitchen at Kemper Center. They have come from Kenosha, they have come from Chicago, they've come from other areas in southeastern Wisconsin, but there's been a total of 11 different caterers that have used the facility. You asked for us to contact the Corporation Council in regards to having the classifications of a preferred caterer and what impact that has on our relationship, and is that a way to do business? I'm paraphrasing what was given to me by Gary Gronke, who made the contact, and this is what the Corporation Counsel said, quote, he will not comment on the business practice of a private business, which Kemper Center is, which the county has a lease with. So we did make our contact, and that is the response we received. Those were the particular items, I think I got all of them, that I was asked about, and we have taken action, I hope you agree, on really everything that you brought forward. And we've made changes, I think, in, all of the cases that I think this committee wanted us to consider.
All right, discussion, Jeff.
I do know that you used 11 different caterers, but the way it was structured, there was obviously one caterer that was used quite a bit more than the rest. So, and that's fine, you've taken steps to address that. I'm comfortable with what the adjustments that you've made.
Okay.
So, I'm okay with that. I want to know, in my mind, that it's equal and fair to all caterers, and that there's no, you know, I'm not even going to say bias, because I don't know, but any preferential treatment given to one and not given to another. I don't feel that, and I understand you're a private business, but it's tied to our name through the lease. So, I mean, if we didn't have the lease, you wouldn't be sitting here, and you could run your business however you want. But I just think it's incumbent upon us to make sure all of the constituents and the people in the community get a good taste, and there's a good perception of fairness. That's what I wanted. So, and we don't have, you know, somebody getting first booking over anybody else, right? That wasn't brought up by you. I mean, first come, first serve type thing. Okay. All right. And what is the length of the lease that we have with them?
I would have to look, but I believe there's 10 years left on it.
10 years left on it. So when they come, when budget time comes up, we don't even have a kick at the lease for 10 years?
I believe that is when the lease is up.
Okay. Well, from my point of view, I think you've made the adjustments. Now I just want to see how it all pans out. So
in 10 years, it'll be 50 years.
Huh?
In 10 years, it'll be 50 years that we bought that, the county bought that in 1977. And that's almost 30, that's almost 40 years. Huh? The point I'm making, it was a 50-year lease.
There were separate leases
over
those
50 years.
Gary, I just want to thank you for addressing everything that I want to piggyback on what Supervisor
Bent said. I appreciate that.
You know, for me, it was important that, again, level playing field, if nobody's getting any type of, and I'm not saying that it's out there preferential treatment, but I just want to appreciate you for stepping up and in a timely manner. So I just wanted to throw it out. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Ed?
Yeah, I want to thank Gary and the Kemper Board for addressing the concerns that were brought to them and coming back with us, forthwith, and addressing them. And I appreciate it. And thank you for your time. And thanks for addressing all those in a timely manner as well.
Thank you.
All I have.
Frank?
Yeah, I want to thank you also for addressing all of our concerns and especially making it a level playing field so that the supervisors aren't getting emails and complaints from caterers. So I want to thank you for everything you did.
I can't remember ever having any problem with Kemper except this one time here that I can remember. There's never been a problem. And I'm not going to say any more, but I have some views on who made the complaint, quite frankly. But I'll let it go at that.
Yes.
I want to thank you for everything you've done addressing the issues we brought up. But I was just kind of wondering what the oversight is of this committee and the whole board, so these same kind of issues don't pop up again.
Good question.
About that.
Maybe you, Joe, you'd want to answer that. He wanted to know what the oversight role of this committee would be at Kemper Center.
Well, if I can, Mr. Chairman, I'm on the board as the county board's delegate to it. And I'm
a member of the board. That's right.
And I attend every meeting of the Kemper board.
Okay.
Mm. I don't know if there's something beyond that. I think that's the primary mechanism.
Yeah, I think the second is this lease to a private organization. That runs it independently, hires and fires their own people, organizes their own activities, has their own board of directors, like an independent contractor.
And runs it for $100,000 a year. Can you imagine what it would cost if we had to run it ourselves? And the buildings have all been improved outside, and there's a lot of work to do inside yet, but they don't have the funds. So maybe that's something we might want to look at in the future.
Gary, do you want to add anything further?
No, if there aren't any questions, you know, and Ron will always bring items to us at the board meeting, so we're willing to act if we're aware of problems. I appreciate your concerns.
Some of those problems can be relayed to Ron, and he can bring it back to us rather than it going that way. If you hear of anything, he can report it to this committee, too.
You are right.
Maybe you want to just mention your forthcoming activities, the Christmas event, etc.?
That's the biggest, and thank you. It's really our biggest event of the year, Christmas at Kemper. And it starts with a gala the day after Thanksgiving. And we have a number of businesses and individuals around who have donated money. And trees are decorated, and Christmas wreaths, mantles, centerpieces. And if you've never been there, please come to the Anderson Arts Center. It's really fantastic. And, you know, people bid on these items. And the profits from those come to Kemper Center and the Anderson Arts Center. And it's a very important fundraiser for us. And if I might, we're getting into the cold time of the year, but I want you to think of something warm. We have talked in our board that we need to do more. Kemper Center needs to do more at in places on the western end of the county. We're on the lake, as you all know, and not a lot of people, there are some, will drive from the western edge, and so we plan on adding one more Twilight Jazz concert this year, and in addition to the ones we do at Anderson, and it will be played at a location in western Kenosha. Where? I can't tell you right now, because we're trying to look for a place that will be very conducive in having some kind of a stage or whatever. You can always get around those kind of issues, but if there's a place, Silver Lake or other locations out there, we're welcome. We're interested in suggestions. But the fact of the matter is...
KD Park.
I'm sorry?
KD Park. Alverman will love you.
But this will be the first time that we've done a concert out in western Kenosha County.
When is that? Good. Thank you, and thank you for coming.
Now, somebody did ask April about budget or...
financial statements?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, if you could leave that with me and make sure that they get it, or we can pass.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, very good. We will move on then to
Mr. Chairman, one other thing I might want to bring up about Kemper. I think everyone knows that the shoreline may be a problem over there, and that's going to be expensive if something does happen, because it's little by little it's getting higher.
What?
The lake is getting higher.
Lake erosion. All along the lake shore.
I think the county executive and the mayor are working on some funding from the government on remediating that issue along the lake.
I just want to make you guys aware of it.
Yes, thank you.
Cheap to fix either.
We'll move on then to item number 8, if there's nothing else on this Kemper Center subject. All right, then number 8 is the funding for overtime organized crime drug enforcement task force.
All right. Yes.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and members of the committee. Let me first start off by introducing myself. My name is Sergeant Mike Weicker. I'm with the Kenosha Sheriff's Department. I've been recently appointed to take over the Kenosha Drug Operations Group. So I'm replacing Horace Staples. If you guys recall, he was recently promoted lieutenant. So this is my new gig, and I hope to run it to everyone's satisfaction. And I appreciate you having me here tonight. Tonight I'd like to talk about the resolution to accept $5,000 in funding from the Federal Organizational Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, in other words, OSADEF, offered to reimburse overtime costs associated with assisting the federal government on special OSADEF investigations. The funding will cover a period of August 1st, 2016 through September 30th of 2016. The funds will be used to reimburse for overtime incurred by detectives of the Sheriff's Department Drug Operations Group. And I'd just also like to make a note that at last night's Judicial and Law Committee, it was accepted and approved unanimously.
Second.
Discussion? Greg?
One of the things I'm learning as I'm on some of these committees is when we get a grant like the money like this, we don't always give forever, right? But at the end of it, we are still expected to do we're providing the service, it's getting compensated. If that stops, the government still expects us to do this at our own expense?
No.
I'm learning that sort of happens in some of these things.
Within our own community, what is happening with this OCDEF stuff is they are coming to us and asking us to help them with their investigations if it involves a multiple, if you want to call it search warrant execution at the same time, and they need extra bodies to help out. We can help out that way, or they can use some of our confidential informants to make certain deals, and that usually tends to happen in the overnight hours or late hours, not the regular hours. So they are paying us to help them, and it's covering our detectives' overtimes.
Okay, so. I understand that, but did you see my question? No, that I guess, and maybe it doesn't necessarily apply to exactly this one, but say that that money, was that for 1 year, the money, or is that just?
It actually comes in quarters. It's from August 1st, well, actually monthly, August 1st through September 30th.
Okay.
Or 2 months, sorry.
A year from now, will we get this again, do you think? You don't know?
I don't know that answer right now, okay, because I'm new to this unit.
Okay. So my question is, but would we still be expected to provide this service maybe at our own cost? I don't know. That's just my...
Well, for our own investigations, local investigations, yes.
I guess this is what... Okay, my point I'm trying to make, is what gets added to our budgets, that when we look at our big budgets, and there's a change from each year, and we're looking at, well, why is this there? Because we're not getting that money again. But we're still providing the function that we started with the government, got compensated, and now we're stopping, especially in the judicial side, the sheriff's side. We're still doing these things, but yet we're not getting the money that we used to.
This is not a grant. I think you're confusing. A grant is something different, where a special program, let's say the federal government or state government, wants you to perform. This is a local function. It's just part of their general operations.
Okay.
The $5,000 is for overtime, for cooperating and working with another agency, but this is not something that federal government has asked them to do or given them X number of dollars to do.
All right.
Right?
But okay.
Yes, you're correct.
Okay, point taken, but do you see what the point I was making though? This is when we go through our judicial budget, we run across, just asking the question. Thank you.
I mean, that what you're saying might be true on the XYZ grant.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's true.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
Yeah, typically when we get grants for like people or positions or something like that, the people who've been around a while, they put an end date on it for that position. So, you know, you don't have, we're gonna get a grant for a part-time person to help in the clerk's office or the treasurer's office, and then when that's done, they're gonna keep that person and we're gonna pay for it. So typically, we do put an end on grants that are tied to us doing something that we normally wouldn't do. The sheriff has to go out and do all this stuff anyway. We're getting reimbursed on this one. But I know what you're saying about grants.
Right. We ran across that last night in the judicial budget. Is why is the change? Well, we don't get that money anymore, but yet we're still performing the function. That was what I was getting at. So you'll see that when the sheriff comes in our budget next week. Yeah. Thank you. That's all I had.
Move to approve, I guess. Did we have a motion?
April was
yeah.
our motion.
Mm-hmm.
We did, okay.
Johnson Dodge made the motion.
All right, anything else? Keep in mind this is $5,000.
Right.
All right, any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the human services. I'm sorry. There's another one from
the Amazon.
Amazon.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead. Mark.
Mr. Chair,
can I get that one?
I'm here to speak on or at least give an
overview of what would be the Amazon supervisor overtime pay. I believe everybody was provided something within their packet that would describe what I'm about to describe myself. It's going to be handled through November through December 23rd. It has to do with overtime at traffic control points being conducted by our deputy sheriff. In 2015, there were 319 slots of 2.5 hours each of overtime that resulted in 786 hours of total overtime. That was fully funded and paid for by Amazon. This year, they're believing that there will be more than 319 slots of overtime. Our manpower may not be able to support that, thus we're asking that our supervisors, sergeants, and lieutenants that are in uniform be allowed to work those positions at a flat rate of $50 per hour for those supervisors. That would only be if deputy sheriffs were not able to fulfill those positions. This again would be at no cost to the taxpayers, no levy money would be used. All costs incurred by the department is paid for by Amazon.
Fine with all that.
Did everyone receive this memo? Question?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. All right, very good. What do you do? Can you kind of explain what it is that you do out there that you didn't have to do before?
I think it has to do with the influx of amount of employees that come during the shopping season, that they increase probably their personnel during this time of year.
Okay.
And these are all traffic control points to get their folks in and out. And I'm assuming at shift change. So the bottlenecks that are created by the multitude of people that are within this, you know, facility is great. And without having officers there to get people in and out in a controlled fashion, it would be fairly chaotic. So.
I see.
Move.
Second.
The memo is inquiry. Does this memo go to the county board?
Oh, no.
This is something we have. Are you asking for approval on this?
Just a notification. That's it.
All right. I don't think this requires approval.
No,
you're not asking for it. Yeah, there's no money that you're asking
just
for.
Just letting everybody know.
Okay. Very good.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good. All right, we will then move on then to the Human Services resolution on the electric recliner purchase. All right.
Hello, Chair.
Just the last time. Sorry.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kelly Dean from Brookside Care Center. I'm the Assistant Administrator. Before you, you have a resolution, and what we're asking for is sole source of a power recliner. We've spent a long time searching for this type of recliner, comparisons, testing, using our residents to actually test the recliners. We purchased a few over the several years, and what we found is this particular recliner is it's a safer recliner for our residents because it doesn't have a gap in between the leg and the seat cushion, which could cause injuries. It's a power recliner, so for our residents who have physical issues in that, this helps because we've tried recliners that didn't, weren't power, and it was very difficult for some of them to use the other recliners. So the reason we're asking for a sole source is because this is it's called the Maxwell Thomas. It's a trademark of Direct Supply. And what we were going to do is we were actually going to go through a bid process, but we found out that it truly isn't actually an open bid, because if we do, Direct Supply is the owner of this trademark, that other vendors would just end up going through Direct Supply for the recliner itself. So that's why we're asking for sole source. At this point, I think that's, if you have any questions.
Move to approve.
Second.
Discussion?
It's passed two committees already.
I sat in on the Board of Trustees meeting and they reviewed this, and that was a unanimous approval of them. It was also approved by Human Services, so just for your information.
Did you try one, Rick?
No, I didn't get to try one, though.
Come over by my
house. Okay.
In front of the TV, huh?
What do you say? It's electric, huh?
Well, it's not the lift kind, but it's a power one, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe one of these days I'll need one of those, you never know.
All right, any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you.
Treasurer report on foreclosures. Terry.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
Sitting up in your chair. All right, so I received a vague request, so I wasn't sure what you guys were looking for on an update on the tax deed process. But then when I looked at the makeup of the committee, I realized that there's probably two of you who were here, or used to be the county treasurer, who know very much about the actual process for the tax deed process. So I thought I'd just briefly go over the actual process. First of all, I should say that it's a pretty manual process at this point. It's a goal to change in the future, but you'll see what I mean as I go through the process a little bit. The first step in the tax deed process is the tax certificate. As all of you probably know as homeowners in Kenosha County, when you get your tax bill, you have the option of paying all in full on January 31st or paying in multiple installments, the last of which is always July 31st. If you fail to make that final payment or payment in full by July 31st, you have until September 1st to pay that before a tax certificate is issued. What's that tax certificate? That tax certificate is the lien that attaches to your property that allows the county 3 years hence to take your property for back taxes. Okay, so that's kind of what starts the clock a ticking. And from that point on, we send out a notice to everybody who gets issued that tax certificate to let them know of that process. We also send out four statements of a year reminding everybody that they're delinquent and to pay their taxes like good people. And then 3 years after the commencement of that, we commence what's called the tax deed process. There are multiple processes allowed by statute for us to acquire property for people who have not paid their back taxes. We, as a county years ago, chose the tax deed process. So what that means is that we start with a final notice. For some of our regular customers, that final notice is the first thing that gets them to really get off their butt and start paying us because they know we're serious about it at that point. Then they make calls. We try to set up payment arrangements for them and get them to pay up their delinquent taxes. If they don't do that, then we move on to the letter report portion, which is we send out to one of the local title companies a request for all the lien holders on the property. And then they do searches on those properties. We do them in groups because, as you can imagine, Kenosha County has quite a few properties, and so to manage letter reports on 400 properties at once would be unmanageable for my staff of three people. So we do them in handfuls going throughout the county. And then when we get the letter reports back, we have to serve all of the individuals listed as lien holders or owners of the property. If we cannot serve all of those people, then we have to advertise it in the Kenosha News three consecutive times. And after that final advertising, what I call the waiting period begins. They have 90 days to make good on those tax certificates for which we can take the tax deed on, or then we can take the property by tax deed. Now, the tax deed actual process, when that 90 days expires, we send them one more letter saying you have 5 days. At the close of that 5 days, Kenosha County will become the owner of your property. And it's pretty much that. That's what happens. It goes down to land information. Al takes that last look to make sure the legal description and all of our documents has been right all along. He signs off on it. It comes up to me, and we hand it over to the county clerk, and the county clerk then takes deed to the property. She files that deed down in the Register of Deeds office, and Kenosha County now holds it, and she commences her end of the process, which begins that part of evicting people if the house has people in it, or securing the property and all of those things, and then eventually putting it up for auction. So, when I say it's a manual process, what I mean by that is there is no easy way for me to go through all of those people that get issued tax certificates and start making payment plans with me other than physically going through every one of those properties in our computer to see if they're making good on their payment arrangements. So we keep a lovely little spreadsheet like this, and you'll see it's got all sorts of pretty little colors on it to say where they're at in the process. And so periodically, because it does take about 2 weeks every time we update the spreadsheet, so about 80 hours of staff time to update the spreadsheet on where everybody's at in their payment process, we go through it. every day it's changing. So as soon as I go through it and finish it, literally an hour after I finish it, it's probably changed again because somebody else has called or somebody else has gone into bankruptcy or somebody else has paid off their property or something like that. My long-term goal with the new tax process, and it was part of the RFP, is to make it so that I can create lovely payment plans in the tax program that I can monthly run reports on, and it will tell me who's falling out of their payment arrangements. As it stands right now, I can't do that, and so we maintain the spreadsheet and continue to go through and work on it that way. Some of the things that we've been working on, I tried to get land information to make you a pretty map to look at, and I have one of just the eastern half of the county, but a lot of the dots are so spread out that it became almost difficult to comprehend. They did a blow up of the center of the city because that's really where the bulk of the properties that are eligible for tax deed are. So I have that if you want to take a look at it. But we've been working with the mayor on trying to get a plan for particularly the vacant properties in the center of the city. After the recession, as you can imagine, we've had an increase in vacant properties because there were a lot of mortgage companies that gave people notices that they were going to take their houses and then never followed through with taking their houses. So people vacated the houses and then the houses sit and no one's paying anything on the houses. So it's come down to a point where there are a lot of houses in the center of the city that are in that situation that need to be raised or severely put a lot of money into to fix them up. So we've been in talks with the mayor to try to figure out a plan for that. I've given him a list, and he thinks the bulk of them that are vacant are probably going to be ending up being raised. So we're working on those ones. It's about 85 properties in the center of the city that we're kind of looking at that seem to be vacant. They're not on payment plans. They're not in bankruptcy. We have concerns about them. So some of those are going on. We've also been working with Corp Council on another group of properties that come about from this recession, which is also the ones that have FDIC liens on them. So when some of our local banks like Kenosha Bank or something like that collapsed and the FDIC took over that bank and they acquired what all of us soon became known to us as toxic assets, those are mortgages. And those mortgages are in our community. And so the FDIC took out liens against all of those properties that they couldn't sell to the new bank. And that lien sits on there. And by federal law, I can't proceed with the tax deed process on anything that has an FDIC lien listed when I do that lovely little letter report we talked to. So there's several of them in our community right now like that. John was able to find a process that we're going to try. We're still working through it. It's complicated with the federal government rules on exactly who we have to serve and how we describe property that we have tax liens on in a way that they're normally used to it being mortgage holders. So it's a little complicated that way, but we're working through that. Another thing that we've been working on is there's a subdivision on the north side of Kenosha that basically collapsed. If it had fully collapsed, it would be easier to deal with, but they sold 12 properties on the front edge of the subdivision. The other 90 platted out parcels were never sold and have gone tax delinquent. However, there are platted roads in that subdivision, but those roads were never built. So if we take them and sell them as individual lots, we'd be selling landlocked lots, which we don't like to do. So the goal here that we've been in discussion with Land Information on is how to combine them when we take them, keeping the easement for the roads and sell them to one big seller so that we still have access to all of the parcels. It's going to be an interesting thing, and John's got his thinking cap on how to put that on our disclaimer when we put it up for sale, that's how these have to be sold, because there's already a retention pond built for that area, so you don't want to disconnect that retention pond from the rest of the subdivision, as that gets rid of the benefit of having a retention pond in a subdivision. Another thing that we've been working on is we saw a firm, an environmental firm. As you may notice when you drive through town, we have some of these, what I like to call small environmentally challenged sites. So these are like abandoned gas stations or really old dry cleaners or some of these, what we call the orange ooze parcels on the north side of town that are contaminated, but not badly enough contaminated to get like Superfund cleanup money for. So there is a company that specializes in trying to find insurance monies from former companies that sat on that site in order to cover the cost of cleanup, so we can then work with them to do that. We haven't signed a contract with them, but we met with them about a month ago.
Yeah.
And we're looking into if we can do that and what kind of liability that would be attached to the county if we proceeded with that. Those are the sites that I think are sometimes the hardest to clean up. We're talking about a big, more contaminated site later tonight, where there are generally funds available from the federal government to clean those up. But the little sites tend to be a little more difficult to get money for. So yet another thing that we're working on is we've been having public works and planning go out and look, especially in the county, at some of our vacant property out there. They're spread out more. There's really not infrastructure in the smaller communities to deal with raising and dealing with bad properties out there. So what we've been trying to think of are ideas on how to figure out which ones we take and sell it as is, which ones we take and clean up, which ones we take and tear down, and come up with criteria for that for the future. So that's been a big thing. And then for next year, when you get to my budget for next year, you'll see an addition of $10,000 in the budget for temporary help to help with the paperwork associated with this process. Because like I said, I have three employees in my office, and even doing that one subdivision we talked about, there are 90 parcels. I have to do each of those individually. So I have to do 90 letter reports, 90 notice of tax deeds, 90 services, 90 advertisings, and 90 tax deed taking notices to take that one little subdivision. So we have that in the budget for next year, and then that's about it. Any other questions on the tax deed process?
Yeah.
If somebody makes a payment after they receive a letter, then they go to the back of the pile again, correct?
Well, it depends. It's part of the reason why this is so manual, is if somebody makes a payment plan and they keep up with that plan, like it's a reasonable plan. If they just come in with a miscellaneous $100
right,
and they've got tax certificates that issue $30,000, that's not going to stop it. And I literally will tell them at the counter, your $100 is not going to do you any good right now. But we do try to work with people and get them set up on a plan, and then monitor them. We have some that regularly fall off, and if they're ones that have fallen off multiple payment plans, then we're more strict on how much they have to have. They have to have a certain amount of money up front, right, like a big chunk up front, and then we'll start working on monthly payments on them again if they've fallen off a couple of times. Try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but sometimes you got to be firm with them. So
about today, now after you ran the report, how many delinquent properties?
Well, that's not delinquents. These are tax deedable. Tax deedable, I think, is the correct phrase.
Right.
Yeah. You're looking at about 450 of them here. So.
What has been the high?
During the recession, we were over 600 that were tax deedable.
That was my question. Are we up or down from that?
We're down. like, if I can get rid of some of these big ones, that like the subdivisions, the FDIC liens and the two subdivisions that I have are about 175 of them. So once you get rid of those, then you really go down to individuals. We have another group in here that we had gotten to the point of taking. It's in Pleasant Prairie. It was a condo development in Pleasant Prairie. The owners are called BJC, but it probably won't mean anything to you. But they had built a bunch of garages for the condo units to sell to condo people, like separated garages from the actual condo units themselves. And apparently nobody wanted them, or they didn't sell all their condos. I don't know what the deal is, but they let all of the garage units go for back taxes. So we had gotten to the point of taking them, but Mary then asked court counsel, and they were like, yeah, no, don't take those. So those are kind of sitting there right now as we try to come up with a plan what to do with condo garages. I don't know. Do you want to start a storage unit? I don't know. But so there are some interesting ones like that. But we're definitely down from where we were a couple of years ago. For sure.
I got a question.
Yeah, go
ahead. With this money you're asking for in the budget, I mean, are you your thought process, Terry, is to you know, help get rid of these big maybe chokers around our neck?
Yeah.
And then in turn, I mean, I'm just trying to understand.
Helping to manage the paperwork, really, is what it is.
Which will help us as a county. County. We can get some of this money paid back.
Exactly. That's the goal.
Great.
Just a question on how much of a technology do you use in the collection process? You said it's manual. You made that clear.
The tracking is manual. The collection process itself is fairly automated in that we run statements through the system. Everything is receipted through the tax system. The interest is calculated in the system. Those sorts of things. When we put on extra fees, like the tax deed fee for things that we do, like the advertising and the service and those things, when we add those on, that's added in the system. It's really the managing of them that's a manual process. And what I'm trying to get in the new system, and I give the new software vendor credit. He's, you know, they made like 30% there in that they figured out how to allow me to make the payment plan in the system. But they only allowed me to do 1 year at a time instead of like the full balance that's owing. And then the next step is being able to not only make the payment plan, but also tie that they have to pay so much in the month of October to payments that are being made in October. And so far they're not there, but that is in the long-term goal there, and they know that I'm very serious about getting that done because I'm very annoyed by having to do this manually.
Yeah. Okay.
So, questions?
Right.
That subdivision you had some houses built?
Right on the front edge.
Okay, and so those are occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it is?
The whole back half is not.
And those lots are, where is it in the city?
Yep, and do you know over by where the bus depot is? And the UAW is over there.
Yeah, right.
But behind where the ball diamonds are there is where this huge subdivision was platted to be. It was called Brookstone Homes is what it was called. And there are on one stretch of blocks about six houses on one block and then six houses on the next block. And it's all in the front because there's actually a road there. But that road only goes barely around the corner and then it stops.
Have you tax deeded that already?
We have not. It's in process. That's my biggest one. That's 90 parcels.
Because I think you could sell those.
Well, that's what I said. We want to group them all together because right now they're platted as individual lots.
Yeah.
And we can't, in good conscience, sell the individual lots. We'd rather tie them together and sell them to a developer who wants to actually put in all the streets and put in all of that stuff that has to get put in. So
right now they don't have any sewer?
There's nothing on the backside. No.
So it's just
there's no infrastructure.
There's no infrastructure on the back of it. They only did that first street, which I'm assuming were the model homes for the subdivision, but that's my guess.
Okay, the question is, what is the value on that? I mean,
well,
right now we're paying the city every time the taxes come around, we're paying the city their share.
The value on the empty lots is about $3,200 a piece.
Okay.
So when you add them all together, it's a chunk of change.
We pay the city that.
So, yeah, it's going to...
All these empty houses in the city that we've tax deeded or whatever, we're paying the city their money. And so, you know, you're talking about you're down to three people in there?
Three and a half.
Oh, you do have...
Yeah, one half.
You do have half.
We lost the other half person 13 years ago.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, you miss it a lot when it's gone.
I used to have five at one
time. I know.
I had 2,000 delinquent properties. And most of them were tax deedable back in
'86. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that was a tough time. Yeah.
I wonder. Rather, you have a half-time person in there. I wonder if we wouldn't be better off just giving you a. Because how are you going to get somebody that's got the skills to do it? Got the skills to do it. If you got a half-time person, that person would be. If we made that person full-time, it would be adding a half. It would cost us a little bit more. I don't know about the insurance thing. I suppose that person can get it if they want to pay whatever. I wonder if we wouldn't be better off because this is a lot of work that we're giving her, and we're not doing anything about helping her get out of the hole, because she's in a hole. Obviously, I can see that. We might save money by making that position full-time. We might want to think about that.
And
another suggestion might be another halftime, so then you don't incur the insurance and other stuff too. So that's another way to look
at it. Well, if you have somebody that can fit in, that's one thing, but it's
very true. Very true.
I think we should look at that at budget time.
Different ways to look at it, I suppose.
I would be happy with that, Rod.
No, I'm not saying it because you're happy. I'm saying it because I'd be happy if you start collecting a little more money. And
I would be too. I would be too.
It might pay us to do it.
Yep. I think you're right.
Right now, we're giving the municipalities their money, like it's, and that's where our tax deductibles are getting higher.
Yep.
They're getting higher and higher.
Anything else? All right, we'll move on to thank you, and we'll move on to the next treasurer's item, the resolution before you regarding the Zizzo scrap.
All right, I've got some pretty pictures for you guys if you want to pass them out to each other.
Zizzo scrap.
Yeah. All right, this one is a fun one. Remember how I talked about it's hard to find money for the small environmental sites? Well, it's hard. It's not as hard, but it sometimes takes a little while to find money for the bigger environmental sites. And this one is a strip of land, as the pretty picture on the front shows you. That's actually two parcels. That's in the yellow. That's next to the Boys and Girls Club, right along the train tracks there. Yep.
It was
open. It was a scrap yard for
so we own it now?
Not yet. This is me asking you permission to do this little deal here. That's what this is all about.
All right.
So there are some other pictures on the backside showing you how much it has kind of evolved over the years since Mr. Zizzo passed away. The phase one environmental report talks about the history of this property. Besides being a scrapyard for the last 50 years, there was also furniture making and many other fun and exciting industrial uses to this property over the last 100 years that has left some fun chemicals on it, cadmium and arsenic and all sorts of good things that the EPA would like to clean up since it's right next to the Boys and Girls Club and currently leaching onto the property that we know of as the Boys and Girls Club. Because as they discovered that while there is contamination on that, most of it drains to the west. And what's to the west? The Boys and Girls Club. So the EPA has offered some money to the city to clean up this site. Well, actually, they're going to do the cleanup. And if the city holds it, they're holding back on doing this until we take it. Because they want to make sure that the EPA, the federal and state governments, don't put all this money into it. And this Zizzo family comes back and says, yay, now we have a magically clean site that we didn't have to pay any taxes on and didn't have to pay for the cleanup of. So in order to get the money and have them clean it up, they want us to take it, immediately deed it over to the city of Kenosha.
Sounds good to me.
And the city of Kenosha will then hold the property during the course of the cleanup, and then they will be responsible for any capping off of the property that may need to be done at the end of the cleanup.
Sounds like a hell of a plan to me.
Terry?
Yes?
We don't have to pay any taxes on it for the city after they give it to them, do we?
Nope.
So this isn't going to cost us any.
No. Our skin in this game is that we're writing off the delinquent taxes. The outstanding taxes.
That's how much?
We write off. It's almost equal between what we're owed and what the city's owed in taxes and specials. The delinquent taxes as of today is $22,835.19. The delinquent special assessments is $18,980.84.
But we haven't paid the city
that. We have not paid those. So the city is writing off the special assessments. Right. We are writing off the taxes. And then we get it cleaned up, and it no longer leaks bad stuff on the Boys and Girls Club property. So.
Second.
All right, further discussion?
It's good to go.
All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 That's a good deal.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We'll pass this along and move on to the next item, which is a resolution to appoint Supervisor Dennis Albert to the County Library Board.
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Is there any discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, that is approved. With respect to reports and are the bills being circulated for approval?
I did
all right. Bob, do you have a personnel report?
I don't have a personnel report.
I've used those chemicals.
And who will make the finance report?
Myself. Okay.
for. I'm going to hand out another update for the general fund. Wait till you all get.
Take some with you. Read it?
What is? Thank you.
Oh, you did? Thank you.
Does everybody have one?
You got one?
Yes.
There you go. So we're still reporting a flat balance. There has been some changes between the revenue and expense. We have increased the health insurance deficit up by 600. There has been some increases in the revenue side. The most substantial was the highway for gas and diesel, other operating and building equipment maintenance, miscellaneous services. We did add, we are forecasting some additional money for child support under the circuit court. And U.S. Marshal vice inmate revenues kind of right where it did, went down a little bit, but so did their expenses, forecast on their expenses. So it's like kind of like a yin and a yang. Some variables, of course, the major ones are the health insurance, human services. We don't know where they're going to, they're looking pretty stable right now, but sales tax and the inmate revenue at the end of the year, we're projecting maybe about 222 headcount, so.
222, you said?
222. Average.
I thought it was.
It was, no, it was 213 and last month, but we've been really averaging about 240, 230. It's come down a little bit.
But why am I thinking the number 199?
That's budget. That's budget.
I'm sorry.
So okay. We're doing okay on inmate revenue.
I don't recall precisely the numbers of the last general fund report. Are these better or not?
It's the same.
It's exactly the same.
Well, we've had some fluctuations between revenue and expenses, but at bottom line, it's the same.
Oh, the health insurance is more right now, though, isn't it?
It is. It's about 600 more.
That's what I thought, because I thought it was three last time.
But then we found some additional revenue in other pockets.
Found some money, huh?
Yes.
All right. Anything else on finance? Oh,
I got a backup.
That's it? There's no other report?
No, that's it.
All right, very good. Thank you. Is there a report on any of the other items listed?
I just want to remind the committee that the meeting next month will be on November 17th.
All right. Anything else? The next item on the business is on our agenda is the employee discipline appeal, which generally is in closed session.
Will we go into closed session?
And is there a second?
Second.
Just a reminder of the procedure here, and we'll vote in a minute, is that while we'll discuss this in closed session, we will go into open session to make the public vote. And I have Joe Cardamone here who will advise us on any procedural matters. And he did circulate a memo and like that. So with that, the vote call vote on closed session. Yes.
Aye.
Are we going to allow the two youth and government committee people?
We have in the past.
All right. So is that going to
but
be?
They need to understand it's confidential.
Yes. Yeah. And Joe, you believe that's
that has been the approach. Okay. As long as they understand.
Is there any objection to it?
Contract. Yeah.
And you understand that it's confident?
Yeah, we signed a contract.
Okay, very good.
Okay, now hold on. I have to start on the recording here.
All right.
There's another one.
How long?